This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 68, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. My mission here at the Alien UFO Podcast is to investigate all things that are part of the wider UFO phenomena. I'm looking at UFO sightings, alien abduction, historic cases, and other related events. And every Thursday I release an episode called Paranormal Stories, and that has UFO cases as well as information on evidence of an afterlife. And if you want to hear the extended version of this interview, you'll need to join the Patreon campaign, where there are now over 60 episodes in the back catalogue. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe. And this week I'm talking to Dan Mariani about his book, Exploring the Boundaries of Time, Space and Our Lives, An Inquiry into Unexplained Phenomena. Dan is an author, wellness writer and healthcare consultant. He has a lifelong interest in the paranormal and cryptozoology. He has read hundreds of books on the paranormal, listened to countless podcasts, and watched many documentaries to give him a background to survey a host of topics related to the field of the unusual. Hi, Dan. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
So we're going to be talking about your book, which is called Exploring the Boundaries of Time, Space and Our Lives, An Inquiry into Unexplained Phenomena. How did this all start for you? Have you been interested in this your whole life?
Yes, I guess it all started for me when I was very young. I started mostly in the science fiction realm. My dad was giving me all kinds of books when I was younger, mostly in the science fiction category, like Arthur C. Clarke, 2001 A Space Odyssey, books by Isaac Asimov, Robert Heinlein, Ray Bradbury. And that kind of opened the door to my imagination. And I kind of considered things out of the context of what I was just being shown or taught in school. So I've always had an interest in kind of edgy topics, things that are on the boundaries of our life, UFOs being one of them, cryptids like Bigfoot, the paranormal, all kinds of things like that. And I kind of stirred my seeking knowledge in this category.
And there's a sentence in your book I really liked when you said, "I question whether I'm a truth seeker or just one of those misguided knuckleheads." And I know just how you feel.
Yeah, because most people think when you start questioning the basic fabric of reality and our universe, they feel that you're totally misguided or you're a quack. But I think, like anything else, if you look into the details a little bit more closely, you do a lot of reading, you have personal experiences, and you start connecting the dots, you realize that there is actually more than what we're being told, and there's a lot more to what we think we know. So I've always taken a very humble approach that we need to be constantly asking questions and going into deeper inquiries about virtually everything around us. And so I've always had that seeking knowledge part of me. And I've been doing it, I guess, for about 45 years now.
And would you say you've got a really good BS meter, but you're still quite skeptical?
No. What I meant by that is I think that I'm good at reading people, reading situations. I think I'm good at listening to people and being able to tell if they're telling the truth or a tale out of school. So as part of the process of writing this book, if you look in the back of the book, I have over 200 recommended books, as well as podcasts, as well as documentaries I've either watched or read. And I've gone through even more than what's at the end of the book. And I've kind of think I put together kind of a best of for the person that really wants to get into this topic and wants to learn more. So I've done some of the filtering for the reader themselves if they want to explore these topics more. The book itself is not a deep dive into any one topic. I just don't talk about UFOs or the paranormal or cryptids. I talk about near-death experiences, Journey of the Soul. I go into a lot of different topics, but my personal knowledge is probably greater than what I present in the book. What I want to do is give the reader a little flair, a few nuggets for them to actually stir their own interest and pursue these things on their own. Because I think, obviously, a book on UFOs, I mean, you could write many books on UFOs, and there are many good ones out there. So I'm just trying to give people, like I said, a flavor for the topics and that I do write about.
Yeah, it's a really great kind of overview of all this stuff. You had paranormal experiences, because I think you say you haven't seen a UFO, but have you had other kind of paranormal experiences?
Not so much myself. I've talked to people, and I know of people who have had. Actually, I did have one paranormal experience that I can think of off the top of my head, actually. I was at an inn in New Hampshire that was known for it being haunted. And I was there with my family camping, and we went to this inn because it had this reputation for having ghosts and such. And we were playing pool, and we passed the threshold of going from the pool table to the main part of the house. And my sister-in-law all of a sudden shrieked, and she said she felt like a tugging at her hair from some unseen entity. And when we left the house itself, I filmed on my camera some photographs, and I saw these little white orbs on the film afterwards. Also, we found film that we had taken within the pool hole itself had little white orbs, and this had never been on the camera before, so I assumed that there was some kind of paranormal activity occurring at that point in time.
And you also had this weird experience, was it in the foothills of Colorado, where you couldn't find your car?
Yeah, that was a very interesting story. I was in my 20s, and I was actually going to visit a person in University of Colorado at the time, and I was driving my car around the Boulder, Colorado, and I was at the foothills of, I believe it was the Flatiron Mountains, and I decided I was a hiker and into the outdoors at the time, so I decided I had some a period of time off before I met this person. So what I did was I parked the car and I went up and I climbed this mountain a ways up. It gave me a nice overview of the valley. I sat up there for a while. And when I came back down, I thought I took the same footpath that I had gone on the way up. And this is kind of a weird experience, because I came down and there was my car, which was a GMC Hornet at the time. I could not find the car. Long story short, I went to see the person I was visiting, and I never found the car while I was there. I was there for a couple of days. I ended up having to fly back to New York. And the Boulder Police Department called me up and they said, oh, we found your car about 5 or 10 blocks from where you said it was. I just found it very peculiar, because I was not really I wasn't disoriented at the time. Why would I not find that car? Which leads me to believe, I don't know, maybe I had some type of missing time experience or not. I really have considered having like hypnotic regression, maybe look into that. I have not done that to this point in time, but it seems like there was like a gap in there somehow. And but I have really no explanation for it. It's just an unexplained event, but it was kind of weird.
Can you tell us about, was it Peter Gersten, when you went to Citizens Against UFO Secrecy?
Right. That kind of set off my interest in the UFO topic. I was in my early 20s and I was actually working in the Bronx, New York. I was working for a candy confectioner, and I had Peter Gersten had a, he was one of the first people. He started this organization, Citizens Against UFO Secrecy, and he had a UFO hotline. And I was interested in the topic. So I gave him a call and he said, "Hey, listen, why don't you come on down? If you're working in the Bronx, I have an office in the Bronx, and let's talk about, I want to show you what the U.S. government has given me under the Freedom of Information Act, also called FOIA." And I walked into his office and he had a picture of a little gray alien over his office, over his desk, rather. And he had this rather large book with a lot of documentation in it. And he said, "Hey, go take a look. Sit down and take a look." And I'm going through these pages, and this was all under the Freedom of Information Act. And virtually every page was blacked out and redacted. Anytime they mentioned any kind of UFO or whatever, it was just giving you little snippets of information. And I said to myself, and I also had a discussion with him, I said, "Wow, this is really amazing. Is this what they're giving you? Is this what they call disclosure, giving you information about UFOs?" And he said, "Yeah, can you believe this?" And after that, I kind of took the approach that you couldn't really trust the information that you were getting about UFOs, that there was a lot more to it than what we know. And when I talk to people and they think that I'm off the rails or whatever, I always go back to that, to this same story, because it's right there on the paper. There's something that the U.S. government or the powers that be are hiding, and they don't want us to know. And that's just the way it is.
When was that? Which year?
That was in the early 1970s.
It's that thing that recently they've released the videos, you know, the Tic Tac, but that was the U.S. Navy that released that, wasn't it? The Air Force hasn't released anything, or the Army. Do you think that they're changing what they're doing, or it's something else?
I don't know what other people are saying, but I think we're going through a process of soft disclosure right now. I think that, I mean, there's a lot of things that are happening, but those Tic Tacs to me are just probably U.S. made, because I think when you really go back into history, you got to look at after World War II, the U.S. was way behind the Germans in terms of space technology. That's why they had that whole, which I'm sure you've mentioned on your show, Project Paperclip, where we snatched up German scientists, German medical people, and gave them a free pass into the U.S. And they worked on technology. And this has been going on for 70 plus years. So I'm pretty sure that, unfortunately, I think there's parallel programs going on. There's the one we see and the one behind the scenes. And I think that those Tic Tacs were probably just coming from, U.S. bases. But they're trying to, in my opinion, they're trying to sensitize the public to the fact that there's more out there than they've shared to this point.
And it seems like it would be a very long-term program if that's what they're doing. It's not like they're just doing it over 3 years or something. It could be decades even.
Right. This could go on. We could see more and more of this as the coming years go on. I think there's... I think most people now, though, are getting used to the fact that, you know, maybe we're not the only ones in the universe. After all, Earth is 4.5 billion years old, you've got to believe that the last, there's more than the last 2,000 years. You know, when you look at the Judeo-Christian perspective on things, everything that was important occurred in the last couple of thousand years. It's probably been on this planet, in my opinion, my humble opinion, several civilizations have come and gone. I would, you know, point people to look at some of the work that Graham Hancock has done. He's got a great Netflix series right now that's current, that's streaming, called, I think it's Ancient Apocalypse, where he predates, you know, a lot of things much further in the past than current archaeologists believe.
I read his book, Fingerprints of the Gods, I think it was in the 90s. And he went into so much detail on the pyramids and the geometry there. And it's amazing what came up there. It's like you say in the book, it may be that ETs have been interfering with evolution over hundreds of thousands or millions of years. Do you think that's a possibility?
I think that's a very good possibility. I think kind of a soft disclosure, which many people had a hard time understanding, was 2001, A Space Odyssey, where, if you recall, in the beginning of the movie, they have the primitive human beings, or primal apes, whatever you want to call them. They're touching the monolith, this large black monolith that comes out of nowhere in their world, where they're kind of just living day to day, trying to survive, trying to hide from saber-toothed tigers, living in the caves all huddled up. And they touch the monolith, and all of a sudden the monolith gives them like a spark of information that maybe the bones that are on the ground that can be used from dead animals can be used as a weapon, which they hadn't considered before. They were hiding from meat eaters, and now this little spark of intelligence gives them, compels them to think about the bones a little bit differently, and they use the bone then as a weapon, and they use it to kill animals, and all of a sudden they're eating meat. Then they realize the bone, the large bone, pelvic bone, can be used as a weapon against other apes, and then they can win over the water source, which they're constantly fighting over who's going to have access to water. Which incidentally might be something we see in our future, as we have water wars and fighting over water as it becomes, fresh water becomes scarce. But in that movie, it suggests, Stanley Kubrick, that there might have been outside interventional forces helping our species along. And I think that's quite a possibility, because if we assume that Earth is 4.5 billion years old, then the universe is even older. You got to assume that there's other life that's thousands and thousands of years older than us, and their technology and everything would be such that they'd probably come to planet Earth and they look at us and see us fighting in the Ukraine, fighting in Afghanistan, that we're a primitive species. And maybe they would have played with the gene pool at some point to try to get us to become a greater, more intelligent species. But that remains to be seen, in my humble opinion.
It's that thing, isn't it, with the alien abductions and that idea of hybrids and genetic manipulation. Maybe they have got a program of making us more intelligent, more spiritual, and less violent, and we're only halfway through the program.
Yeah, I think we're really at a crossroads right now. We're at a very dangerous point where you look at the balance between science and technology and our spiritual development. And I think that right now, and if you notice lately, I don't know if it's come to the UK, how some of the AI proponents like Elon Musk and such are saying, let's slow things down. Let's slow things down. Let's not really push this AI agenda just yet. And because I think there's concerns that our technology and artificial intelligence is surpassing our capability to handle it and also our spiritual development. And if that's out of balance, we have the potential for maybe destroying ourselves. And that's got to be a concern. Our spiritual selves have not really evolved to the point where we can, I think, handle high technology in a peaceful manner. And that's if there's really outside entities looking at this, I'm sure that's one of their concerns. One of the great UFO researchers, in my opinion, is Linda Moulton Howe, and she talks a lot about how there have been reported UFOs around nuclear installations, especially over the last, ever since we set off the first atomic bomb, but pretty much globally, there are UFOs are reported around nuclear installations, and they've even shut them down at various points.
Yeah, and she did. Did she do a lot of research into cattle mutilations as well?
Yeah, that was where she first started. She was actually one of the first bona fide UFO researchers. She went to Stanford University, I believe, got a master's in communication, and she was in Denver, Colorado, working for a TV channel, doing mainstream stuff, really. And she was brought into the fold of investigating cattle mutilations, which were the cattle were found bloodless, with key organs cored out of their bodies, eyes, rectums, and such. And the surgical precision was such that it was like really beyond even anything that our modern day surgeons could possibly do. And that kind of set her off. She's like now 81 years old, and she has a really great podcast in the US called Earth Files that's I highly recommend for the readers. But she investigated cattle mutilations, and there's many theories why these cattle are being mutilated. Many of the ranches report seeing the cows taken from the ground, being kind of beamed up off the ground or dropped on the ground from a large height. It all seems very strange. Like one of the things I question, as well as other people, is why leave, if you're going to take the cows, why leave them mutilated on the ground? That part of it that just doesn't make sense to me. If you're doing something that's underhand or there's some kind of subterfuge involved in it, why not just take the cows away totally and not have them on the ground? Because now they become evidence.
Yeah, it's like they're trying to send a message, whoever's doing it. And I'm sure there's people who say it's not anything to do with aliens. It's a covert military or something like that doing experiments. But it's like they don't care if they're being found or they're doing it on purpose to send a message.
Right. If it's being done off planet or by some other superior being, it is to send a message. Look at this. We can take your cattle anytime we want, and we're going to just drop them back on the ground. But I think I mentioned in the book, there could be another few things involved with this. One of them being, as you know, in the 60s and 70s, in the Midwest of the U.S., there were a lot of testing of atomic bombs. And they've been following the effects of radiation fallout there for decades. I mean, it could be these cows are being taken and analyzed a little bit, to see what the long-term effects of radiation in the area are doing, because that is part of the U.S. food supply. Although, again, why leave the cow then back on the ground so everybody can see it? Another theory is that maybe there's some of the life form is taking the cows and using part of the cow for some type of sustenance, like they're using certain parts, certain glands, certain organ parts they need for themselves. So there's a lot going on there. Maybe they're just cloning the cows for other purposes. I don't know. It's a hot topic. I don't think that Linda Moulton Howe ever got to the bottom of it. She did have one one rancher just say that they're, as far as he was concerned, that they were coming from UFOs and extraterrestrials. But it still remains an open question.
It was happening decades ago, wasn't it? Was it the 60s, 70s? And it looked like the cuts that are done on the animals are done with a laser. And I don't know if we had the technology then.
No. Yeah, that's what makes it all kind of otherworldly. People really don't have a great explanation. I don't know. The funny thing is, there has been in the last several years a renewed frequency or volume of these mutilations going on. So it is ongoing, and it still hasn't been totally resolved.
It's a bit scary in a way, but I suppose I've only heard a couple of reports that humans might have been treated like that. So they don't seem to have moved on to doing it to us yet.
No, there have been. I think those are kind of, those reports are kind of hushed up, I think. I don't think they're the ones that are really coming out. They're more uncommon, and they're probably a very good investigative reporter, probably that would be a good topic to go into, but I don't know. That could be, it's just scary to think about that.
Well, I wanted to talk to you about something else that I haven't covered on this podcast, and that is Project Serpo. And I remember finding a website about it and reading tons and tons of stuff that was supposed to be a diary of somebody who went on the trip, but could you give us an overview of it?
Well, Project Serpo, I believe probably the best source on Project Serpo, I think Len Kasten wrote a book about that. And that also overlaps with, when you look at a lot of the research that's been done with a Reagan briefing that also occurred that might have had, you know, to kind of reinforce the fact that there was this Project Serpo. But that was kind of released soft disclosure in a sense. And I don't know if you've seen the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Oh, yeah, maybe 10 times.
With Richard Dreyfuss, because that was kind of, some people feel that was kind of soft disclosure for Project Serpo, where there was an alien exchange between the U.S. and this other species that I forgot the name of the planet, but where the U.S. sent some, I guess they would have been exchange astronauts, soldiers, or whatever, in exchange for two aliens, and they were going to get some kind of technology exchange. And the folks went to the planet and they lived there for a number of years. Some chose to stay there. Some died while there, and it was, apparently, based upon the research, there was some definite technology transfer that occurred, maybe relative to propulsion systems and such. But I don't really have much more to say on that, except that it was mentioned to President Reagan when he had his UFO briefing that this indeed occurred, if you believe that that briefing statement is true. Again, a lot of this information is what I do is if I see it in multiple sources or multiple people talking about it, I give it a little bit more value. But if it's just a one-off mention, someone says something, then I don't really attribute it to being real or have much weight.
And there's a transcript, isn't there, of the Reagan briefing?
Right. That's by Gil Carlson, I believe it is. You could get a copy of that if you want on Amazon. It's kind of interesting.
You mentioned Close Encounters of the Third Kind there. And there's an idea that perhaps Hollywood might be part of a disclosure, like Steven Spielberg was given little bits of information to help him with that. Do you think that Hollywood might be involved in it, or is that just going too far?
I think that's true. I think if you look at it, and it's been mentioned in many sources, even that Gene Roddenberry, the producer of Star Trek, he was given information, and that many of the things that were in Star Trek might indeed have been part of like this, like what I say is the second, not second government, let's call it the secret space program, that many of these things are occurring. In particular, something called the Galactic Prime Directive. Many researchers believe that that is indeed a reality, and that, you know, because you got to ask yourself, if someone came here, if I was from a different world, I came here and looked at the Earth, I'd say to myself, wow, they're a mess. Look at what's going on here. All this death, destruction, they don't care about, everyone's fighting. It's kind of like Gulliver's Travels, where the Lilliputians are fighting amongst each other. We could come in and intervene and help them, but there's a directive in place saying that they have to work it out for themselves. That's the part of the race and species evolving and growing. And part of that is a big theme of Star Trek. And I think that might have been Gene Roddenberry, as well as maybe people like Steven Spielberg have been exposed to certain things. And maybe that's been translated in many of their films and movies. In the case of Star Trek TV series. So, I do agree with you. I think that there has been some sharing of you know, kind of top secret information.
Do you think that over time they've been trying to do a disclosure? Maybe the governments have around the world, but it's the ETs who've gone to them and said, no, we don't want disclosure, because the ETs could have it if they wanted to. They could just turn up over every major city in a UFO and let everybody see it. Maybe it's the ETs that are controlling disclosure.
That's also a common theme. I mean, if you're getting what you got to say, what's in it for them? What's in it for Earth? I mean, it's hard to say their agenda is being met by keeping things undisclosed, then why should they disclose anything? And the same thing with Earth. If their agendas are being met, they're getting the technology that they need and anything else, why should they disclose it and cause chaos? I think a lot of it has got to do with this whole concept of free energy. I think because basically the Earth's economy is controlled by oil and gas and coal and energy. We're still all on that. And I think that if we went through a major disruption, there would be financial, a major disclosure that could be financial chaos. And I think that's really what one of the concerns is. And then if you provide disclosure, what's been going on for 70 years that no one knows about? Where is all the black, who's funding all the black projects? Where's all that money going? Now I forgot your question.
It's that thing about maybe the ETs are in charge of disclosure and the government's just doing what they're told.
That could be it. That could be it. At this point, who knows? Maybe, you know, there's, it's all interconnected. It's strange. There could be a whole, if you read Bud Hopkins and some of these other folks, there could be a whole hybrid agenda. There could be people that look like us that are, you know, hybrids, and they could be in seats of government, and who knows? It's really hard to say.
And then there's so many things we hear from people who claim to have abductions or be contacted, and it gets real high strangeness and peculiar things that could even connect with the spiritual side of things. And so it goes beyond that thing of like Star Trek, where it's just people inside metal spaceships.
Yeah. Interestingly, I met two psychics recently because as part of my marketing on this book, I've been hitting the psychic fair circuit a little bit because I find that people in that basically genre a little bit more open-minded, and they also think a lot differently than normal people you might find just riding the subway, so to speak. And two psychics who I know have done bona fide readings for people, and that I kind of trust their judgment a little bit, told me that their psychic powers came from implants that they acquired during abductions. That I'd mentioned alien abductions before. What was interesting is when I interviewed both of them, they gave me similar information, that they were taken aboard a UFO, and that they remember being implanted. And they mentioned that they encountered, both of them, gray aliens, which, in my opinion, and in many other researchers' opinions, are kind of drones. They're kind of half organic, half artificial intelligence. And they kind of do the work for more of a higher race. And they both of them said, which was very peculiar, that they met these mantis-like beings, praying mantis-like beings, at the end of their experience. And one of them claims that she's been abducted multiple times. In fact, she asked me to maybe write her, maybe work on writing her autobiography, which I'm not considering at this time, but maybe I'll do it. I'm not sure. But so they both met gray beings with like a praying mantis-like being that was on top, at a higher level. And they said that they both attribute their psychic abilities to having those experiences, which I thought was kind of interesting.
And you also talk about what is a kind of psychic medium thing of channeling aliens. You talk about Edgar Cayce and somebody channeling an entity called Ra.
Right, which is very interesting. I definitely recommend people look into that. I think that it kind of became popular in the U.S. by a guy by the name of David Wilcock and Corey Good. Corey Good said he was part of this 20 and back program in the U.S. And David Wilcock was kind of a UFO researcher. He wrote some good books, one called Synchronicity. And they talk about the law of one. I think I mentioned in the book, David Wilcock to me has gone off the rails a little bit since he wrote. I like two of his books. I think one of them was Synchronicity. I think the other one was called Source Code or something. Yeah. So they introduced me to the and they introduced to their audiences this whole law of one. And in that, it's very interesting. You get the books, they're channelings from a woman who was very, like Edgar Cayce, very simple-minded. Not simple-minded, but wasn't sophisticated. And I think her name was Carla Ruckert, I believe her name was. And she would, through hypnosis, she would be able to channel this race of beings originally from Venus. And when you read the answers to the questions that are being asked under hypnosis, you say, where did this information come from? It was very bizarre, very detailed. And supposedly they were trying to share this information to the people on Earth. Now, normally I would dismiss this out of hand and throw the whole thing as being a farce. But when I read the information, a lot of it really started to make sense. And the person who did the interviewing was a physicist who got interested in the UFOs. So he had some good credentials. And basically they were, you know, giving us, they shared the kind of the history of the universe much more so in detail than what our space, our cosmic scientists are telling us. And they have a very interesting perception of the Earth, like the beings on Earth being third density beings, the lesser beings, you know, like cats and dogs being second density beings, and like the whole evolution of the universe is to get to higher densities, up to like, I think, 8 or 9, 9th density. They even, if you read the information, even they asked them questions about Bigfoot, and they said that was a second density being. And there's all this kind of information, but what I found is some of the information in the Law of One, I found in other sources. So it kind of gave it a little bit more credence and probability of being true to me. And I recommend people check out the Law of One. It's a free, you can get the books, it's a free database online, or you can buy the books if you choose.
You mentioned Bigfoot there. What do you make of this Bigfoot phenomenon? Because I'm far from being an expert on it, but I have heard that sometimes Bigfoot turns up at the same time as a UFO sighting.
Right. There's actually been a few documentaries about the Bigfoot UFO connection. Bigfoot, I really do believe exists. And I believe that Bigfoot exists by virtue just of all the sightings. I mean, there's something called the Bigfoot Research Organization in the U.S. And when you look at the data and the information, there's literally thousands of sightings across the U.S. And there seems to be clusters in various parts of the U.S. where Bigfoot is reported. But we know that Bigfoot has been reported like in the Himalayas. It's been reported in Africa. There's all different names for Bigfoot: Yeti, Skunk Ape. Even in Vietnam, they've been reported. There's a book called Vietnam Declassified that talks about like a Bigfoot-like creature in Vietnam. But I think that this is where you kind of go a little bit out into the boundaries of reality. The question is Bigfoot a native creature, a resident creature? Is it a missing link, kind of like a Gigantopithecus or some other branch of evolution that is surviving? Is it a creature that ETs bring in off planet and they use Bigfoot to do like tasks for them? There's a whole other theory about Bigfoot, that Bigfoot is interdimensional, transdimensional, because there's been many reports of the Bigfoot tracks appearing or on the ground and then just stopping and disappearing. And people, I've seen like a shimmering image of Bigfoot. There's a really good series in the U.S. called Expedition Bigfoot, where they've seen the shimmering type Bigfoot, and they've been wondering whether or not it's more like a trans-dimensional type being. People they call that claim they speak to Bigfoot, mind speak, or they're having a telepathic connection with Bigfoot. There's a lot going on there. Some of it is really bizarre. Some of it people say, you know, why can't we find Bigfoot? Why can't you see it, find the bones? Well, maybe Bigfoot's smarter than us. Who knows?
And it's a weird kind of similarity between UFOs and Bigfoot is that there's never really been a great picture of a UFO or a Bigfoot. And there's this idea that they may both be transdimensional.
Yeah, well, the thing is, when you think about it, I mean, I think Einstein said that if you go exceed the speed of light, time slows down. So if you're going to travel long distances through space and have that capability, you would need to go at these astronomical levels in terms of your propulsion, which I don't know if the organic form could take the G-forces to go at that level. So the question you ask yourself is how do so-called UFOs then, if they're coming from other galaxies, solar systems, or even other universes, how do they travel? So they must be traveling interdimensionally through maybe wormholes or portholes where you can literally enter one opening and you're hundreds of light years away at another opening. Because that would be the only way to do it. So either they have the technology to open those portholes, or they have they understand how they work. But I think that's really how. That's why I think that makes it more possible that they're probably trans-dimensional or interdimensional beings, because they are able to do that.
So we change the subject now. You wrote a fascinating thing about Long Island UFO network, and they believed a spaceship was shot down. Well, what happened there?
Yeah, that was, I had joined, I'm trying to think when I was, probably in the 80s, there was something called the Long Island UFO network, and there was a rather mild-mannered man that was in charge of it, John Ford. He was like a court officer in Suffolk County in Long Island. And he and some others claimed that there was a ship that was knocked down by either a plasma beam weapon or a particle beam weapon. Now, on the surface, this might seem like bunk, but the fact is that this occurred in the Pine Barrens region of Long Island. And very close by, there's a very big installation called the Brookhaven National Laboratory. And that's kind of a, I know one person that works there who's an engineer. It's a top secret place. They don't really let everyone know what's going on there. There's actually one of those Hadron particle accelerators, I think, underground there that they're working on. And allegedly, this UFO was knocked down. They set the Pine Barrens on fire as a cover-up, and the ship was hauled away. There's been numerous eyewitnesses to this. I was not privy to this, but I became part of I joined the organization after it happened, and the organization used to go on night sightings for looking at UFOs and such. And this was a story that was told. And anyway, this person, John Ford, was getting a little bit aggressive with some of his claims and getting out in the public and making certain statements. And unfortunately, I think that he became a target. They did not like what he was doing, exposing this, and they concocted some things about him that eventually put him in jail. And I found it hard to believe. I was not part of the organization when he was put in jail and all that part of it. But I thought the guy was very, very credible. He seemed very harmless. And I just think that he became a target. But there was supposedly some type of takedown of a UFO right on Long Island.
They must have tried to pick it up then. Was there any rumors about that recovery?
Now, most of these things, what you hear is, you know, black helicopters coming. Areas are cordoned off. I didn't really hear too much about the recovery. But there's enough military installations in the area for they could have taken any kind of wreckage anywhere pretty quickly. Plus, that Long Island's right along the, it's an island, so there's water around it. They could have had, you know, come and move something via boat.
And with secret bases, you also talk about the Montauk Project. And there's all sorts of rumors about weird stuff going there, isn't there? And you talk about Stuart Swerdlow and him saying there's an alien connection.
Yeah, he wrote a book. I think it's called The Montauk Project. He's got a podcast. I've heard from various people. There was even a famous pro wrestler who became a U.S. Senator, Jesse Ventura. He had a show on called Conspiracy Theory. But there's like an abandoned base out on Long Island in Montauk Point, which is on the south fork of Long Island. There's two forks. One's called Orient Point. The other one's called Montauk Point. And there's a base there called Camp Hero, where they've said that, again, this is me researching several sources, that there were two main things going on there. There was something involving MK Ultra. I don't know if you've ever covered that on any of your podcasts.
No, I haven't. No.
Okay. MK Ultra is where they supposedly have used young children and programmed them. It's a form of mind control. And for nefarious purposes, for later on in life, kind of like Manchurian candidate type stuff. But the other thing about that is that there was also, which I think Swerdlow talks about in his books, MK Ultra, that there's also where they supposedly worked on time travel. And that has also been purportedly going on. There were a few other people, I think I mentioned them in my book, besides Stuart Swerdlow, that claim that there was some time travel experiments done there, kind of like the Philadelphia experiment.
Can you tell us about your other books?
My other books, I've got a full gamut of books. The first book I wrote was The Road to Chapultepec Park, which is about a futuristic world where global warming counterintuitively leads to an ice age. And it's about an MIT physicist who travels with his little bioengineered dog from San Antonio, Texas to Chapultepec Park, New Mexico. A lot of it has to do with, I explore the topic of weather modification and chemtrails, which is kind of conspiracy type theory, but I believe that's also happening. Just look up in the skies. And I wrote a series of self-help books, one with is called Bicycling with a Purpose, Shift Gears to Lower Stress, which is about using hobbies and exercise to lower stress. And then I wrote another book called Choices, The Art of Thriving in a Sniper World, which is about making good choices through life to break through like barriers we imagine that contain us. And then right before this UFO book, I wrote a book called Behind the Examining Room Door, a consumer guide for navigating healthcare. It was about my 21 years in the pharmaceutical industry, 9 years in hospitals, and my take on pharmaceutical therapy, doctors and hospitals, how it all works, how they interact, and how the consumer can leverage knowledge about the healthcare industry provided in this book from an insider point of view to optimize their health. So I write on a variety of topics. The UFO topic is one close to my heart, and I've accumulated knowledge over many, many years. So that was the this book was a result of that.
Well, it's been great talking to you. It's been a fascinating conversation, and thanks for coming onto the podcast.
Thank you, Simon.
And that was an interview with Dan Mariani about his book, Exploring the Boundaries of Time, Space, and Our Lives, An Inquiry into Unexplained Phenomena. And if you want to hear the rest of this fascinating interview, you'll need to sign up to Patreon for the extended episode. Just go to patreon.com/alienufopodcast. If you join the $4.50 a month tier, you get access to an extended episode every month. If you join the $7.50 a month tier, you'll have access to an extended episode every week. And when you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And please check out my other podcast. It's called Past Lives Podcast. There are over 250 episodes. And on the Past Lives Podcast, I look into evidence of an afterlife. I also release an extra episode of the Past Lives Podcast every Thursday, and that's called Paranormal Stories. My website is pastliveshypnosis.co.uk, and the link is in the show notes. In my work as a clinical hypnotherapist, I take people through past life regression. And when you book a past life regression hypnosis session with me, and you've signed up to Patreon, you get a 25% discount. And I'm offering a free consultation call, which can be booked on my website. My Instagram is pastlivespodcast with an underscore between each word. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app. Make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening. So what's the alien connection with that place?
I'm not really that sure what the alien connection is, except maybe that there was a...